The development of Central Lansing, which was then called Middletown, and this reference has to do with the height of the river, Lower Town, below the rapids, Middletown, somewhat south of here where the present capital is located, and Upper Town, just south of there, at the high point of the river, within the Platte. It was assumed that the primary street in Lansing, in Michigan, Michigan, it only kept that name for a year, would be Main Street. That's where the businesses would be, that's where the commercial enterprise would be, and so on. That street actually is not at all commercial. In fact, because what happened was, the government center, which was going to be in Middletown, turned out to be a magnet for commercial development as well. So Washington Avenue became the main street. A somewhat similar thing happened here. The initial supposition was that the primary commercial street in North Lansing would be Center Street. It would be the center of the town. Center Street isn't at all the center of things now because this area, west of there, closer to the river, attracted all of the activity away from Center Street. So the corner of Turner and what was then called Franklin Street, now Grand River, became the actual center of North Lansing. And of course it was a center, not so much of Lansing as a whole as Lansing's industrial district. The water power meant that this was where the industry would be located because, for the most part, industry at that time was water-powered, whenever possible. Not so much because there weren't other sources of power as because water was cheap. It was almost always there, in fact, sometimes too much of it. So it was at this location that a series of mills and factories were constructed. The mill race that served them ran from the dam as you presently see it, and the dam was in exactly the same location, pretty much on line with that, northeasterly, to Factory Street, and then almost on a straight line from Factory Street northwest to the corner of Franklin and Turner, in what is now a parking lot. 24 feet in average width, and it served a large flour mill about the site where we're standing. Another mill to the northwest of here along the riverbank, it served a manufacturing facility, a planing mill, and a turning mill. A wood manufacturing enterprise right at the dam itself, and then further to the northwest, a foundry and machine shop, all of these used water power in various ways. Even the machine shop used water power to drive the line shafts, which operated all of the lathes and planers and machinery in the shop. You must imagine this as an industrial area. It wasn't pretty. In fact, it probably hasn't been about this pretty since 1850. Very few trees because they'd all been cut for constructing buildings and fuel. At that time, you could see all the way to where the present state capital is without any interference at all, because all the trees had been cut. What you did find was a lot of timber lying on the ground being pureed, and being sawed and being milled and being fabricated into lumber that would manufacture buildings. In addition to that, the flour mills, the grist mills, the parting mill, and the machine shop and the foundry were all rough manufacturing operations. They used buildings that were boomtown-like buildings, frame unpainted, ramshackle, additions here or there. Five bridges crossed the mill race at various points, and three footbridges, and eventually a railroad trestle, and in the yards around the buildings were the raw materials with which they worked, the scrap materials that they discarded, junk machinery that they no longer used, coal, which they used in fairly large amounts, and ashes. As I say, not a pretty picture. A lot of smoke, a lot of cinders, and everyone was delighted. If you look at advertisements from the 19th and even into the early 20th century for products, you can usually see the factories they come from. These are points of enormous pride. Those factories all have smokestacks, and the illustrations all show great clouds of black smoke pouring out of the smokestacks, and no one is embarrassed by that. Everyone thinks it is wonderful, and because it means development, means progress, means productivity, it's what everybody wants. And people live next door to such things without any inhibitions whatever, and that was the case here. Residential areas sprang up around this industrial area, and commercial development as well, along Ben Franklin Street and Turner Street. I mentioned the coal. The reason for this is while water power is cheap, it was intermittent. You could run a mill from about the 1st of March till about the middle of July reasonably well, with the kind of water flow that the Grand River has. After that, not so much. The river simply isn't high enough to permit water power at that point. So very early on, all of these installations found themselves required to install other kinds of power. And that power was always steam, which was fired by coal or wood. So all of these mills had engine houses attached to them, not inside because that was too dangerous. They caught fire a lot. But outside, in a separate building, would be a boiler that would drive a turbine, and the turbine would drive the line shafts for the mills that were inside the building. The fire danger was extremely great, partly because of the materials that were used. After all, we're talking about flour, which is combustible. In fact, in its fine form, it's almost a mist like gasoline fumes. And wood, wood chips, sawdust, wood buildings that were extremely dry, and all of these things are terrible fire hazards. So everybody was kind of happy that there was water nearby. Also, that's one of the reasons industrial districts of old towns are located near rivers, even when they didn't use water power, were typically by the river so that when they caught fire, as they almost certainly would, the fire could be fairly likely to be put out before there was too much damage. In the case of North Lansing, these mills did catch fire routinely. In 1877, both of the large flour mills burned down only a few years after one of them had been expanded at great cost. $15,000, which was a lot of money in those days. The total loss of those two mills in 1877 was about $85,000. Strangely enough, the foundry didn't burn, but that's the way it goes. When the mill in which the fire originated was rebuilt, it was rebuilt with metal cladding so that sparks from another fire wouldn't set it off later on. Never mind the fact that it had been the source of the fire in the first place in 1877. That's the story of the reason of this location being where it is and when it was. As the town prospered, all three sections of the town grew pretty much simultaneously. So in that sense, Old Town really isn't the beginning of Lansing. It's the beginning of this part of Lansing. It's the beginning of North Lansing. And it was known as North Lansing until very recently. That was its name. It had a post office with its own postmark. It had two railroad stations, ultimately all of which involved the destination North Lansing, not Lansing. Gottlieb Ruder, an early mayor of Lansing, arrived in the U.S. as a teenager from Germany, sent here to find his relatives, who would put him up for a while until he made his fortune, which he ultimately did. The point of origin on his ticket was Stuttgart, and the point of destination was North Lansing, Michigan. As it turned out, he got off at the wrong place. They called Lansing, and he got off there and had to walk the whole way. But the two places were distinctly unlike one another in some respects. It's true that in fairly short order, industrial development did proceed downtown in Middletown. Mostly on the east side of the river, where there had been unusable lowlands subject to flooding and kind of marshy, but also on the west side of the river as well. But this was the primary, the first industrial district in the town of Lansing and North Lansing. This is the end of Track 2. Please walk east to the corner of Grand River and Center Street, in front of the Arctic Corner.